Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the IGO ANGO QoT Device Protection PDP Working Group meeting on the 27th of May 2015. On the call today, we have Petter Reinforth, George Kirikas, Jay Chapman, Jim Bykoff, Paul Tattersfield, Val Sherman, Christine Duane, and Phil Corwin. We've received apologies from Osvaldo Navoa, Mason Cole, and Laura Schulman. And from staff, we have Mary Wong, Steve Chan, Barry Cobb, Amy Bivins, and myself, Matthew Peregrine. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Petter.
Thank you, Petter Reinforth here, and welcome back, everybody. It has been a time in between our meetings, although we have at least some points on the agenda to update you on and to further discuss. I had, in fact, hoped that it would be more specific and clear replies from some groups. But let's start. And point one, any new statements of interest? Okay, I see no hands up. So we had our working group on the schedule for the GNSS Council meeting right there on the May 21st, and I see that Phil is on the line. Maybe you can say some points of that presentation and what was
discussed. I'd be happy to, Petter. Yeah, we gave a short briefing to the council during the call last Thursday, updated them, basically told them that after making very substantial and rapid progress, we had bogged down somewhat due to the need to get some degree of certainty as to the scope of sovereign immunity for IGOs. Also noted, and this was in the context of another matter involving the GAC that had just been discussed, where similar frustrations had been voiced, that we had finally, after waiting several months, received a reply from the GAC, which will be discussed on this call, but that it provided little in the way of meaningful response or facts on which we could move forward, which was something somewhat frustrating. Nonetheless, we advised them that we were seeking a meeting with the GAC and possibly some IGO participants at the Buenos Aires meeting to get some better guidance and engage in some dialogue regarding the legal implications of what we're doing, and that we would either find some other experts or make our own best estimates of the scope of the sovereign immunity, and expect it to move forward with some greater speed after Buenos Aires and wrap up our work hopefully by early fall and certainly in advance of the Dublin ICANN meeting. So that's how it went. Any questions on that?
I think so far.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Yes. I mentioned the GAC response, and you have all received it. It came to us now more or less a month ago, and I don't know if we can have the possibility to see it on the screen as well. It would be good. But I can start.
Petter, this is Mary. It should be on the screen for everybody. So if
yes,
for
I
some reason
now.
Someone
yes.
is not seeing it, yeah, okay, great,
good.
Thanks.
Good. So the first question was, what is the GAC's view on the working group's decision to exclude INGOs from further consideration in this PDP? And, well, frankly, have a as clear reply as possible, I think. The GAC does not have a position to share with a working group, although they welcome our recognition of the special protections afforded by ICANN to the International Olympic Committee and the International Red Cross and Red Crescent Movement. So I take that reply as an acceptance of our conclusion and that they are satisfied that we have done the work, so to speak. I don't know if you have any further, any of you have any further comments on or questions on that. And then question number two, if it's the GAC's position that an entirely new curative rights mechanism must be created, is it the GAC's understanding that the protections afforded to qualifying IGOs under Article 6 of the Paris Convention would be the criteria for establishing standing under any dispute resolution procedure that may apply to IGOs? And here they generally state that GAC advice to the ICANN board has repeatedly emphasized that IGOs are in an objectively different category to other rights holders and that governments support the implementation of appropriate protection of IGO names and acronyms on public policy grants. This is the basis for the inclusion of IGOs on the reserved names list for GTLDs. I take that as more or less just repeating the general statement that we actually asked to be further commented in details. That's not the kind of reply that we looked for. Mary, yes, please.
Thanks, Petter. And I don't know if any working group member has comments as well. So while waiting for hands to go up or anyone to interrupt me, I guess I'll start. And without trying to be too subjective or reading between the lines, I think one of the things that struck staff when we saw the GAC response to this, and it's a very diplomatically phrased response, I should probably say that's what it seems to be, but the specific point that I wanted to raise that we noted is that when the GAC talks about the inclusion of IGOs on the reserve names list for GTLDs, I think we all know that they're referring to the list of IGOs that enjoy the interim protections at the moment emanating from the prior PDP, but more to the point for us, I think, is that, again, as we know, the basis for inclusion on that list that was compiled through the GAC was the .int criteria and not Article 6 TER. So I don't know that there's anything more to do or say other than to note it for now, but it certainly was a point that occurred to us as we looked at this document. Thanks.
Thanks, Mary. Yes, I certainly agree. And I also saw George Collins here. They didn't really answer question two. No. As I said, that they repeated what we already know from a more general point of view. Okay, then question number three. In opposing amendments to the UDRP and URS, does the GAC thus advise the GNSSO to preclude any possible changes to its mutual jurisdiction provisions to address specific sovereign immunity concerns of IGOs? And how should a curative rights process appropriately deal with this problem while also ensuring adequate due process protections for registrants? Here's something that we want to have the possibility to discuss in a smaller group during the upcoming item meeting to see what they really have in mind, because I read that they wrote that the GAC notes that IGOs in the recommendation to you of January 16, 2015 have advised that they consider their claimed immunity from national jurisdiction to be fundamental to their role as international bodies. And here is that there are non-judicial means to ensure due process, such as –
is it? I had some problem with my screen here. Arbitration, which AGAC believes should be considered in more detail. Well, the current UDRP system is more or less such an arbitration procedure, but what I think they meant here is the next part, if any of the parties will consider to go further, to complain the decision and go to a national court action, and that we shall have some kind of next step in the arbitration process. But that's something that we, as I said, need to discuss in more detail on what they actually meant with that. Any questions, comments? Yes, Phil?
Yes, Peter. One comment and one question to staff. I found the overall document lacking in any very useful guidance, although, as Mary said, we can read between the lines on some things, although the line she read between indicate a difference between us and the GAC on what would be required to have standing for any curative rights process for an IGO, where we've come down squarely on taking the simple step of asserting their Article 6 tier rights under the Paris Convention and thinking that the .int, having a .int domain is insufficient to confer standing. I found their response to question 4 the most disheartening, which doesn't mean I'm against meeting with them, and maybe they'll be more frank in an off-the-record verbal conversation. But to tell us that fees for any process should be free or nominal, and then to refuse to decline to tell us where they think the current fees for the URS and the UDRP are nominal or not, is really shows the lack of any useful guidance in this response. My question for staff, under other issues, they say, with regard to the other issues in your correspondence on which you sought comment, I don't recall at this point in time what other issues we might have raised in our inquiry that they didn't address here and said and are saying would be better addressed in a joint discussion at a future ICANN meeting. Do you recall what those are, Mary, or anyone else on staff?
Phil, Petter, everybody, this is Mary. I don't recall offhand the specifics, but I think, if I'm not wrong, that because the GAC, like the other advisory committees, was sent a somewhat customized version of the basic set of questions that we sent to all the SGs and constituencies and so forth. So I think that this refers to sort of the general part in our inquiry that talks about, you know, the other things with regard to our charter. So we started each of our solicitations with, you know, very specific questions such as excluding IGOs, and how to ensure due process, but then we pointed them to the additional questions in the working group charter. And then I think we noted in particular things like the URS possibly being considered a consensus policy through a PDP, et cetera. So I think they're referring to those, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Petra here, and I also see from the chat room, interesting note from recall, similar conflicts can be found with IGOs and employment law. And George replied that, yep, and we've seen court decisions which differ dramatically from IGOs' claimed rights. So it seems, and I think we know that from before, that they want, IGOs want to have more protection with this system than they actually have when it comes to other forms of disputes. And that may also, frankly, be the reason why we cannot get a perfectly clear reply or decision from GAC, because that would actually give IGOs more protection than countries have, so to speak. So, yeah, that was, in short, the reply we got from GAC, and I see Mary's hand up. You want to add something?
Yes, Peter, I did want to add a couple of points, if you don't mind. I think, first, the point that you've just made as to the concern that, or at least a concern, that IGOs in the immunity point might end up getting more rights than states themselves, as well as the other concern that our working group has noted previously that we also notice has been something that's been discussed in the international forums, such as at WIPO, which is this idea of creating new rights in and of themselves that don't exist. So in this particular case, then, I think our working group has, in our prior discussions, noted that this is somewhat of a long-standing concern, and these concerns, to some extent, have been reflected in public documentation on the same type of topic, even in a different sphere other than ICANN. And on this point as well, if I go back to the GAC's answer to our question 3, when they speak about non-judicial means such as arbitration to ensure due process, which they believe should be considered in more detail, I think it would be useful to have it on our record that in between the time that we sent these questions to the GAC and the receipt of their response, this working group has looked at the due process issue in relation to an arbitration mechanism. And specifically, we looked at one of the earlier WIPO documents about what a de novo appeal mechanism might look like and what some of the dangers or concerns there might be. So just again, for a reminder for everybody, even though I suspect no one on the call needs that reminder, but also just putting it on the record for all of us. Thanks.
Thanks. George?
Yeah, I wasn't really impressed with the letter, obviously. One thing that is perhaps positive, they do address in the other issues section at the end of the document that, you know, they're open to having a joint discussion at a future ICANN meeting, and they also say that they didn't respond to various other issues. So I was curious what those other issues were, if anybody remembers what the other questions were that they didn't respond to. Like they've only responded to 4 questions, but presumably we sent more than 4.
Yeah, as I say, we hope to have more informal upcoming meeting. By the way, I don't know the status of that. Have we got any more clarifications if there will be such a meeting? And in that case, when? Because before I give it over to you, Mary, it would be excellent if we could have that meeting before our full working group. But I presume that we will have to take the possibilities we have in any way. Mary, please.
Thanks, Peter, and thanks, George. So with respect to the meeting, I think we are still trying to, following up on Phil's point and update to the council, to facilitate discussions between yourselves as co-chairs through the coordination of the council and with Mason Cole as the GAC and GNSO liaison on board to, you know, basically figure out where each group is, the GAC and the GNSO, on this curative issue as well as on the preventative issue. And it may also be something that the council would take up with the GAC or vice versa, possibly in Buenos Aires. We don't as yet have any confirmation either of the topics or of the meetings, but I think I can safely say that with respect to a sort of full joint discussion between our working group and the GAC, it's a very, very unlikely that that will happen in Buenos Aires because of scheduling, if nothing else.
Okay, so
Sorry, just getting unmuted. Mary, I did want to emphasize the point you just made. If we get a meeting in Buenos Aires, it's likely to be, it's not going to be a meeting just for working group with GAC members. I think the best we can anticipate is a meeting of the co-chairs, some ICANN staff, some GAC representatives, possibly IGO. It's going to be a small meeting, and the chairs would report back to the full working group. What I wanted to add to that, Mary, was certainly I hope that staff will, we can get this message to Mason as well, the GAC and the IGO should definitely be quite clear on the fact that if they do not meet with us in Buenos Aires, they've likely forfeited their chance for that discussion because this working group anticipates completing its work prior to Dublin. So I hope that will that message can help in obtaining the meeting.
Petter, it's Jim Bykoff.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
The only thing, we never got, to my recollection, we never got a response to the detailed questions from the IGOs. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So, I mean, while we have these answers from the GAC, most of which are not really responsive, the IGOs are the parties that are that seem to be asking for the protection, and yet we have nothing from them. So I think, you know, until we get an answer from the IGOs, it seems to me they should be the ones putting forth their position in detail on these questions. I'm not sure we're going to make a lot of progress if we don't have their answers.
Thanks. Yes. Well, I hope that there will be one or two representatives from the IGOs in our informal meeting as well. I completely agree with you that this is, in fact, a topic that the IGOs are most interested in having a result from, and these are the groups that have also asked us initially to discuss and to create some solutions. So even if GAC representatives have also contact with IGOs, it would be excellent to have some representatives from the IGOs that we can discuss directly with.
Well, that's very nice, but wouldn't it be a good time now to send a reminder letter to the IGOs and say something similar to what Phil said and say that we haven't gotten any detailed replies from you, and if you want us to consider this further, we must have a reply within, you know, a certain period of time.
Before I put in, Mary, I think that's a good idea, although I may rephrase it in a more diplomatic way, but definitely to send out a reminder and make a
friendly but understandable phrase that we need their reply in order to consider their specific topics in the right way. Yes, Mary.
Thanks, Petter. Thanks, Jim. I was actually going to make a similar suggestion that the staff will follow up since we did send them the two requests, the first one that they responded to, along the lines that you suggested, and noting that the plan is for us to have recommendations done before Dublin, and so their input would be, you know, very helpful at this point. I can also include in the reminder a query as to whether any of the IGOs, particularly the small group that have been mostly dealing with it, plan to be in Buenos Aires. And I can also note that our working group is planning to have a session or a meeting in the Buenos Aires week and see whether we get a response to any one of those little notes and reminders, but I'll send them all in the same message.
Perfect. Thanks. I think we all agree with that, so please go ahead. Well, we also have to know that, I mean, there is soon an overview of the UDRP process, so something that we, if we conclude something in our initial report, there may be these issues may come up again and that topic. Okay, so that's where we stand so far. And the next point of the agenda is just to actually do something before we have the possibility to meet with this small group. And that is to possibility to use an external legal expert, again, someone else than the prior one this time, to get out with some specific questions, I think specifically on this last topic. And so I open up for the discussion on, maybe we should start with what is your view of that idea to get some further external input? Anyone that's against that idea? I see no. Yes, Steve.
Thanks, Petter. This is Steve from staff, and not to advocate for or against, but just to provide a little side exercise for us, determine whether or not we want to go down this path. So the legal research as it relates to immunity, so this was not an anticipated cost for this group, so it does require staff to go through an exercise to see how we can find some creative budgeting to be able to get the research approved. So there's a time and resource constraints for us that we need to work through. But in thinking about this, I think it's good to understand, you know, what the outcome. So without trying to determine what the research might actually end up presenting to us, I think we might have some ideas about how the research may end up being provided back to us, because both Mary and I believe George and perhaps Paul have done some research into the topics, and you know their conclusions are that immunity is not absolute, and also that in certain cases they are willing to waive that immunity, and also so that a certain outcome may dictate what the group may develop as an outcome. And then if the opposite is true, if international standard and immunity is supposedly absolute, how does that affect our work? So I guess it's probably a good thing to understand how it would affect our work and whether or not going down the path of legal research is really going to affect our work. So if it's not absolute, maybe we leave the UDRP as is, and then if it is absolute, then maybe we would be more inclined to develop a separate process, for instance. So I think it's possibly a good idea to at least consider how the legal research would affect us to help determine whether or not it's a logical path to go down.
Thanks. I saw one of the documents we have for this discussion was the staff briefing note on the possibility of a de novo appeals mechanism under the UDRP for IGOs. Although I note the four specific points there, I'm not sure it may be the best way to go, but at least it's something that we note from historical point of view as a proposal. As you can see, recommended minimum elements for such a procedure: the party should be able to restate the case completely anew. They should not be confined to claiming that the UDRP panel did not consider certain relevant facts or wrongly applied UDRP. That's good in case. But should also be able to submit new evidence and new factual or legal arguments. And in order to provide a meaningful appeal, conducting a de novo arbitration should, as a general rule, not be more burdensome than conducting litigation in a court of mutual jurisdiction. Number three, the arbitral tribunal should consist of one or more neutral and independent decision makers who should not be identical or related to the panelists who rendered the UDRP decision. And finally, either party should be able to present its case in a complete manner. The arbitral tribunal should, for example, have the authority to allow for or request additional written submission, and it should be possible to hold in-person hearings. I think the previous comments when it discussed this, I think it was USA that stated that they see if I can find it. They stated that they were quite satisfied with the UDRP as it looks today and didn't want it any new ways to deal with domain disputes. So that's one point. Phil?
Yes, Peter. A couple of points I'd like to make on this topic. One, given the potential political ramifications within ICANN of whatever this working group finally comes out with on a final decision, I believe that while it may not be absolutely necessary for us to consult with a recognized expert in the field of international law and sovereign immunity, it would be extremely helpful to be able to cite that in our final report as evidence for the basis for whatever we finally come up with. So I hope that staff within ICANN, as they're discussing financial requirements, I can't imagine that this would take more than a few thousand dollars and perhaps we can get it at a reduced rate or even for free from a legal expert who wants to, publish on this or be cited as our chief expert on this or whatever. But even a few thousand dollars, given the political stakes within ICANN, I think would be worth it. So far as the scope, here's a couple points I'd like to make. I think we all know that IGOs should be protected in their core functions from interference from sovereign nations, that no nation should be able to enjoin an IGO from carrying out its core functions. But we're not talking about core functions here for any IGO. We're talking about trademark rights. We've found that even under Article 6 tier, that no nation is bound to recognize their rights within the trademark system conferred by Article 6 here. Any nation has the right to object, refuse to grant that protection within their own borders. And we're talking about what, if any, interference would be caused to a IGO in the extremely rare instance of a registrant appealing a UDRP decision or a decision on another CRP to a court of mutual jurisdiction. So we're talking about an extremely rare circumstance in regard to trademark rights, which are not the core function of any IGO. So I think we have to remember the context we're talking about here. And my final point is that this working group has been mindful that in every arbitration proceeding, there's another party, the domain registrant, and that party has rights as well. And the UDRP and URS were constructed in a manner to supplement existing legal rights and not to replace them, and that we have to consider whether any thing we recommended that would deny a registrant access to national courts would be going beyond the proper scope of ICANN action. So those are the points I wanted to make on this topic. But returning to the key one, given the political stakes within ICANN, I think it would be very helpful to be able to cite a recognized expert on the law of sovereign immunity as it applies to IGOs to the extent that we can find one. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, and I agree that, I mean, the UDRP process is actually created to make a quick and simple system, and the panelists, the arbitrators, are not considered to make their own searches or to ask for additional comments or papers. And whatever comes up with by the end of this year or for the starting of next year, we'll go through the UDRP process. I don't think there will be that kind of changes in the process as such. As I said, it's the good thing is that it's a simple and clear system, that we should not add it any more complicated to that. And also that whatever conclusion we come up with, it's good to have the possibility to note that we also have an external expert comment on our work and on our conclusions. I just find the initial U.S. delegation reservations that was also supported by Japan, where they said that an arbitral appeal mechanism would contribute to eliminating the four most important due process safeguards of the UDRP: the possibility of broad court review, the limitation of the proceeded narrow causes of action, the limitation of available remedies, and the limitation of trademark rights for which there is a firm basis in international law. And the delegation expressed concern that this might undermine the legitimacy of the UDRP as a whole. Yes, Mary, please.
Thanks, Peter, and thanks to everybody as well. So just to follow up on Steve's earlier point, I think that what staff definitely had the impression from our previous calls that the working group was in favor of getting a legal expert to provide us with some further analyses. I think what we're trying to get a handle on here is the scope of that query. And it's not just a concern of cost, although, you know, cost clearly is something that we do need to factor in. And so thanks, Phil, for providing the stated basis for why we might need and want to do this at this point. But so, for example, it would also impact on the type of legal expert that we would be looking for, or even how many. If, for example, our question to the legal expert or questions consists mostly of, this is what our research has shown as to the what we believe to be a lack of uniformity or universality regarding IgO immunity. Can you further elaborate? Here are some of the pieces of legislation and cases that we found. Would this be an accurate representation? That would be one fairly specific area of inquiry. But it would be a somewhat different and additional area of inquiry if we also then went forward to ask the other question that concerns us with due process, as in, so if we were then to go ahead and we were going to look at something that is framed in an arbitration model but that would ensure due process, what would that look like, or are the concerns expressed with earlier processes founded? Like I said, I think that's a somewhat different query. It does broaden the scope, and it would affect who the expert is. So we're just trying to get a sense of the working group as to, well, two things. First, on a general level, what is the scope in terms of the topics that you would like to see addressed? And then secondly, we can get more specific and drill down a little bit into the actual questions that we want to send to the expert. And our expectation, as George notes in the chat, is that that would be based quite significantly on what our group has done to date. But I just wanted to highlight those so that we can guide our creation of the questions and so that we know, as Steve notes, how the potential outcomes might affect what we do going forward.
Thanks, Mary. So I open the floor for if you have any specific questions already that you want to put forward to that external expert.
Peter?
I see Paul's question. I'd like to resolve this issue during today's call. that would be perfect. Yes.
I was going to say, in looking at the GAC response to question three, they note that the IGOs back in January had advised that they claimed immunity to be fundamental, but they don't claim it to be absolute, which I think we've concluded it's not. And, should we try to get more information, from them rather than this type of a sort of non-responsive response as to what they see as, whether it is absolute or limited, and provide examples? And, we know that they haven't really answered this question, and neither has the GAC, but should we try to get the IGOs to give us a written response to this? Because I think it would be helpful, may be helpful in soliciting an opinion to have their viewpoint on that.
Right. So, well, what I suggest is that when we send a reminder to the IGOs, we should put forward some extra questions, or...
Right. Right, because I think it's... to say that it's fundamental... I mean, what does that mean?
I understand your point there, although I'm not so sure that we will get a quicker reply from them if we, when we remind them, also add some questions or put forward further specifications. That's a difficult situation. Either we have the possibility, to get a reply on our initial questions, and then hopefully can follow up directly thereafter, maybe in Buenos Aires, rather than to to put new questions or points for them right now. Yeah, Mary.
Hi, Peter, Phil, Jim, everybody. I guess just thinking out loud here, as we as we don't know the time frame for a response from the IGOs, which I acknowledge is something that hopefully sending the reminder, which we will do this week, could at least elicit some sort of sense of when they think they can come back with us to us with something. I guess it's a question of going back to the other reasons of why the group might want to do this. And so in the meantime, we could discuss, you know, whether it is helpful to us to have, I guess, an additional point of input besides the IGOs. It would be interesting, again, I'm thinking out loud, if we get somewhat different or seemingly different views from the various experts and IGOs, but I guess, you know, we'll see, do that if we come to that. I think from the staff side, a couple of things. In the past, when we've reached out for external legal advice, you know, we've been very specific as to the questions we wanted answered because, you know, as we noted earlier, that guides the outcomes, amongst other things. So looking at the chat and sort of listening to the discussion, I think the staff were quite comfortable that the working group would like to see a clarification or a confirmation that our understanding, our general preliminary understanding of the status of international law with regard to IGO immunity is what we have in our paper and our research. Beyond that, though, I'm not sure that we're getting a really good sense of what else or what more specific points that we might want to raise. And I note that Paul has put a couple of suggestions in the chat, Paul Keating, I mean, and I don't know if everyone is in the Adobe chat, but Paul, if you don't mind, I think I might read that one of the suggestions you made for scope is the extent to which immunity is waived as a result of disputes arising out of or in connection with trademark rights asserted by an entity, which is a related but somewhat different question. So, Petter, I think what we're looking for here is some maybe further guidance that on top of the confirmation that I've just summarized, is there another question or are there other questions that the group would like to see addressed that we can try and package into a more specific referral, if you like?
Thanks, Marion. Thanks, Keating. I was just reading this as well, and I think that's a good suggestion. That's at least one question or one general question that we may put out in one or two sub-questions. But as we said, it's important to have some kind of more specified reply from an external expert. I think it's good to have the possibility to refer to that in our upcoming conclusions. So, Paul Keating, I agree, it's one of the questions that we should put forward. And I also saw Paul Tattersfield's comments that the IGOs may not be forthcoming because they have stated their position and they don't want to be seen to be negotiating away elements of what they are seeking. Yeah, you may be right there. And what we could do is to first just send out the specific and clear reminder. And if they come back and say that we will not give you any further comments until when we see each other in Dublin, then we also then we and especially they will have a further time to also consider additional questions from us, if not too many, but one or two specifically additional questions. Yes, Philip.
Thanks, Peter. I just wanted to make one more point in this discussion, which is in my earlier remarks I emphasized, rights of registrants to have access to their legal rights in whatever jurisdiction they reside in. There's also the speech aspect. It's no secret that some IGOs are not held in the highest regard, and a registrant might use the name or acronym of an IGO for a legitimate criticism website, and the IGO might bring, let's say it's, UNESCO.sucks. We have that new TLD, and let's say the UNESCO brings a URF action, and it's suspended, and the registrant appeal is either through UDRP or a court action. There's a speech aspect involved there where we don't want to create or provide a process where registrants could be deprived of their legitimate right to criticize the activities of certain IGOs. Their IGOs are organizations made up of people, and organizations sometimes go astray and are inefficient or corrupt, and we can't be handing a weapon to IGOs where they can shut down any criticism. So, again, I think that just emphasizes the stakes here, and that while we have to fully consider whatever the legitimate rights are of IGOs and protect sovereign immunity as it applies to their core functions, what we're talking about here is trademarks and the counterbalancing rights of registrants as well as IGOs. Thank you.
Thanks. And that's a poll question. IGOs are not actually uncertainty now. If an international arbitration panel considers Russian, Chinese, and Iranian panelists, it's likely to find much differently than a U.S. court for elements like free speech, fair use, etc. Yep. That's a good example in the debate, George. I see from the notes here that staff to send reminder to IGOs to include mention of planned date for working group report Dublin, and query if IGO reps plan to be in Buenos Aires, where the working group will have a session. I think it would be good to put in that reminder that we prefer to have their reply before Buenos Aires, or at least to maybe more frankly point out that at least if we can meet them in Buenos Aires, to have their initial comments on the response, even if they haven't write it down yet. As I said, diplomatic reminder, yes, but we also need to be fairly clear that we need to have their response on our specific questions as soon as possible, and hopefully at least informally in Buenos Aires. I don't say that it will work out, but at least that we do it, and we comment that. Okay. Just to... Yep.
I think, this is Jim Bykoff, I think it would be, you could put this diplomatically, but I think it would be preferable to say in this reminder letter that that they should give us written comments before Buenos Aires, because to make any discussion, really productive, not to have their comments in advance would really slow things down. I mean, all we're going to get are oral statements that might be conclusory. So to have, something in writing would really, be important in order to prepare the working group representatives who will be in Buenos Aires to be able to have a productive discussion.
Thanks. I think it can be phrased that way and still point out the importance of their reply in not to do non-diplomatic way. So good.
But also that the reply should be detailed and not conclusory, the way, we don't want a statement saying it's a fundamental right, immunity is a fundamental right, what they said before. I mean, that doesn't say anything. So I think we want to press them for some detailed responses to these questions that were put.
Yes, exactly. That should be clearly noted that we want to have a reply on the questions that we sent out, not just, as you said, general reply that will not give us any further inputs to work on the side on. If they cannot come up with that in due time, we also frankly have to take that as the case is not of that importance for them anymore. So if they want us to fully consider this, we need to have reply on our specific follow-up questions. Okay, we have the full time. Just wanted to conclude that we have at least one initial question to send out to the external expert, and we can work on that and also see within the next few days this week whatever further questions that. It's good to put on that agenda. And as I said initially, we will hopefully have a small meeting in Buenos Aires with representatives from GAC and IGOs. When I leave over to Mary, when is our full working group meeting in Buenos Aires? Mary?
Yes, Peter and everybody. The staff have requested a Wednesday morning slot, which is the normal slot for GNSO working group meetings, and hopefully that time will not be too terrible for working group members who will be joining us remotely. We don't have the confirmed detailed schedule yet, but we specifically requested that it not be in conflict with the board and GAC meeting that's also going on Wednesday morning. So we're quite hopeful that we will have a decent time slot on Wednesday morning local time that will follow the board and GAC meeting.
Thanks. And finally, I saw George question, are we meeting next week? And we discussed that. Wasn't it so, Mary, that we concluded that next week we don't have enough on the agenda, but we will at least schedule one further meeting before Buenos Aires to have a follow-up and see what further issues we have. Mary?
That's correct, Petter. As discussed in the chairs and staff call before today, the thought is that it would be helpful to at least schedule a meeting before Buenos Aires. And given that we will have sent a reminder to the IGOs, like I said, we'll do it within the next day or so. One thought that we've just had as staff is that if we do go ahead with that meeting prior to Buenos Aires in, say, 2 weeks' time, two Wednesdays from now, we can also try to nail down the specific scope and questions for the international law expert as well. And I noticed that Phil has his hand up, so I'm going to stop talking.
Yeah, I just want to note that in the co-chair's discussion with staff yesterday, we had tentatively scheduled a meeting for Wednesday, June 10th, and I do want to note for the record that if that slips to the 17th, I likely will not be able to participate that day because that's the day on which I'll be traveling to Buenos Aires. So hopefully we'll have that call on the 10th.
Okay, Phil, that's noted. Well, we'll send out the proposed date for the next meeting. So thank you all for today, and we will, as soon as possible, send out our the list of questions for the external expert, and I also look forward to all further input we can get from you on that topic. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Petter. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Lance. We now stop the recording.